Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 447 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by a former heavyweight world title challenger, the main man himself, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how are you doing this week, my friend?
I'm doing great, my brother. How are you?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. We're going to start with a review part, as always. We're going to dive straight in at the Edeon Arena Osaka in Osaka, Japan. Over here, my favorite, well, I don't know if he's my favorite, but one of my favorite boxers from Puerto Rico. This man being Emmanuel Rodriguez. He was unfortunately dethroned of his IBF bantamweight world title. A unanimous decision there away from home in Japan against the home fighter Ryosuke Nishida, now 9-0. So he takes the title away there from Rodriguez. Can't say I saw the fight. Moving now to the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA. This one, of course, I did see. I managed to find a really good stream for this, actually. Didn't cut out once. I'm going to start on the undercard over here. Like I say, it was on Amazon Prime Video. It was on DAZN pay-per-view. But yeah, let's start down the undercard. Jesus Ramos returned to the ring with a TKO win for him in round 9 against Johan Gonzalez, who's now 34-3. Gonzalez gets stopped for the first time there by Ramos, who was coming off a really bad performance last time out against Erickson Lubin. He's now 21-1. Also on the card, we had him on, I think it was, 2 weeks ago, if I'm not mistaken, Mario Barrios. He's now 29-2, a unanimous decision there over 12 rounds against Fabian Maidana, the brother of Marcos Maidana, now 22-3. That one was for Barrios's WBC interim welterweight world title, Maidana down in round 3. Yeah, it was a straight right hand that put him down in that third round. I didn't think he was particularly hurt too much, but a really slow fight, Eddie. A really boring fight, to be totally honest with you. Maidana had, you know, a very low punch output, I think. And it was hard to watch, in all honesty. You know, it wasn't like, you know, the chief support that we wanted to see. You know, I think the whole card itself, you know, there was a lot of fights going the distance. And like I say, you know, it was one of those fights where, you know, you're expecting a nice fight, a nice co-main event to bring you into the main event, but it didn't really deliver. Like I said, it was quite boring. Mario Barrios as well, his right eye swole up really badly as well. But yeah, I think he won the fight. I think he won the fight quite clearly, but yeah, it was a fight that I think I'm going to probably forget by next week. It didn't do anything for me. I don't know what you made of it. I know that we've got quite a few things to get through, so keep it short and sweet, Eddie.
Yeah, it definitely didn't, you know, live up to the kind of, you know, similar lined up fight for Canelo, you know, especially with this kid who made it really, really fun, at least early. But I will say this, as boring as it was, I really was surprised at how good a boxer Maidana's brother actually was, skill wise. Like, his punches looked pretty precise. He did things good defensively when he was focused. He landed some good counter shots. If he was more active and, you know, took a few more chances, the fight would have been much more interesting. But he was surprisingly really, really good as a boxer. If he had his brother's hammer, oh my goodness, he would have probably got Barrios out of there. But all in all, yeah, it just wasn't the kind of fight action wise that you would want to see, especially previous to what's going to happen in the main event with Canelo and I can't think of the name right now, but anyway, yeah, it just wasn't it. But like I said, I took that he could box really well, and it kind of surprised me for being Maidana's brother. You know, you just would kind of figure he would be that no style, come in, just bomb you out kind of guy, but not at all the case. So, yeah, I know it'd be weird for me to say this, but if he could get himself together and put more punches together, I would like to see him again, because I really liked his skill level as a hardcore guy. But anyway, yeah, that was it.
You don't know the definition of short and sweet, Eddie, but let's move on. Let's move on. We're going to go now to Brandon Figueroa, another friend of the show. He's now 25-1 with a draw. He successfully defended his WBC interim featherweight world title with a 9th round KO against Jesse Magdaleno, now 29-3, still in search of win number 30. A left hook to the body in the end in that 9th round with 1 second left in the round. You know, he simply could have got straight back up and gone back to his corner, but he simply couldn't do it. It was a paralyzing shot. Yeah, I think the fight itself, you know, it took a few rounds to kind of warm up. I think Brandon Figueroa started quite slow. Like I say, I think it was kind of his fault that it took a few rounds for the fight to warm up. You know, he needed to kind of put the pressure on a little bit sooner than he did. But listen, in the end, it wound up working out for him. But Magdaleno was quite sharp early on, you know, his hand speed, his counters, they were working nicely. And Figueroa seemed a tiny bit frustrated, but like I say, after about 3 rounds, Figueroa did then turn it into his kind of fight, and he began to dominate, and it was a good ending to the fight from him. You know, obviously it's a fantastic shot, but, you know, he started to kind of run away with the fight, I think, and you know, he turned up the pressure like he does. I love watching Brandon Figueroa fight. You know, he's a seriously effective dude. I think he'd be one of the guys you'd want on your team if you were going to, you know, have like a bar brawl. You'd definitely want Brandon Figueroa on your team rather than against you. It doesn't matter if he's a little guy. So, yeah, good win for him. Like I say, happy for him. And moving to that, well, no, there's one more fight to mention before we move to the main event. Imantis Stanionis, now 15-0, a unanimous decision for him over 12 rounds against Gabriel Maestra, who loses his O. He arguably should have lost that O a few fights back. He's now 6-1 with a draw. It was for the WBA welterweight world title. Tricky first few rounds for Stanionis, you know. He definitely got hit more than most people expected he'd get hit throughout the contest, and he got made to respect the power of Maestre, I think, you know. Stanionis won wide in the end, but like I say, Maestre didn't fade at all, and a lot of people felt that Maestre, being the older man, you know, turning pro so late, he'd probably fade. He's probably going to fade in those later rounds with Stanionis and his normal work rate, but To be fair to Maestro, he finished quite strong. You know, he didn't look like he had any weaknesses in there, which is a strange statement to make, you know, considering he was going to be fighting Stanionis. You know, Stanionis was a huge, huge, huge favorite going into that fight. Way too big in the end. Those numbers were laughable. I think Maestro was something like an 8-1 underdog, which was crazy. I wouldn't mind seeing Maestro again. I decided to tweet after the fight, you know, it'd be a weird fight and it probably doesn't make any sense, but I wouldn't mind seeing Maestro in there against someone like a Conor Benn. But obviously, as for Stanionis, you know, he'll move on to bigger things, you'd have to think. And obviously, yeah, I think these belts are probably going to get fragmented, you know, if Terence Crawford is to fight at 154, which we know he's going to be doing that. I'm guessing that the belts are going to wind up becoming vacant soon, so everyone's going to be there trying to pick up the scraps. What else did we see? Yeah, straight to the main event, I guess. I'm going to give my take and then come to you, Eddie, after that. Canelo, now now 61-2 with two draws. It was his 65th pro fight, a unanimous decision against Jaime Munguia. Crazy thing, you know, Munguia loses his O, he's now 43-1, but to think that these guys' combined records going in the other night was 103-2 with two draws, that's just insane, man. But anyway, the two Mexican warriors got it on for the undisputed super middleweight world titles. Munguia down in the fourth round. Listen, it was a good start from Munguia. He arguably won the first three rounds. And then, like I say, in that fourth round, a right uppercut put him down. Crazy drama, you know, because he sprung straight back up off the canvas. Obviously, it was the first time he'd ever been down in his career. And I thought he might have got up a little bit too soon, but obviously he got through the round. Canelo won that round 10-8, and it was, you know, it was kind of, you know, at a good time for Canelo, I guess. If you've lost the first three rounds, you know, all of a sudden you score a 10-8 round just straight back in the fight, you know, with that one punch he landed, and he needed that 10-8 round, which was great for him. But then the tide did seem to turn really into Canelo's favour after that. I gave him the 5th, the 6th, the 7th, and the 8th rounds. Munguia did have moments where he would, you know, really let his hands go in like a 20-punch combination, and it was really eye-catching. But Canelo's guard as well, so hard to penetrate that defence. Canelo's offence as well was calculated, just like his defence, and Canelo was bossing it, really, you know. Like I say, Munguia was fighting in spurts and it was eye-catching, but it wasn't enough. And Canelo, you could see that experience was so evident there. You know, he's too clever for Munguia. And when Munguia was being backed up, he was largely ineffective. I did give Munguia the 9th round. I thought he had a lot of success in that round with his combinations. The 10th round was a close round, could have gone either way. I think in the end I kind of gave it to Munguia, a little bit of a sympathy round. The 11th round was close. I gave that one to Canelo. And then the 12th round was definitely a Canelo round. So in the end, my scorecard was 115-113. So I had Canelo by 3 in the end. But like I say, he won the bout unanimously. And I want to come straight to you, Eddie. What did you make of it? Some people thought Canelo was on the slide. I don't know what that was all about. He looked great.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know what they're talking about. Munguia is not no, you know, half-ass type challenger. I mean, regardless of whether he had the experience. I mean, look how many fights he had. I mean, obviously a lot of those fights aren't, you know, at the highest level. But what I'm saying is he's been in the ring quite a bit. So he's been at the high level for a while. So you got to give the kid credit. He's a big kid. You know, I didn't realize he was as big as he was. You know, he was sharp early, you know, he threw a lot of good. He was trying to do the bivel, keeping the jab, you know, and the length, you know, and keeping his hands on Canelo a little bit, keeping him occupied. But at the end of the day, I think the punching power Canelo to him and, you know, obviously the IQ was just a little bit too much. You know, he wasn't able to continue to keep, even with his high punch count, trying at times to overwhelm Canelo. He was just too calm and understood what he was doing too well at this point. Landing shots on his arms, you know, beating down his body. He just really, after a while, it just becomes like, you know, a lot of his punches were arm punches. You know what I'm saying? You know, to some degree. He wasn't able to put together a serious onslaught, you know, like to at least bother a Canelo. Like early on, you would even get a little nervous. Like some of those shots look like, damn, it might hurt him. But he pretty much after he dropped them and a few rounds after that, he was just beating on his arms and his body so much. It was wearing the kid down. You could tell. You could tell by looking at his face. Not that it was all beat up and bruised, but it was just the expression on his face. You could tell he was like, damn, I didn't expect to be in this kind of a situation. But all in all, Canelo, I thought, looked good. You know, he's still Canelo. You know, right, like he was saying at the end of the thing, right now he feels like he's the best out there. I mean, we can't overlook Bivol because he actually beat him, but he feels like pound for pound, he's the man. And, you know, it's hard to argue, you know, totally with that. But he's still got a little more proven to do. He hasn't fought Benavidez yet. I don't even know if he will. He hasn't beaten Bivol, so there's a little bit of proving left on his plate to, you know, for him to really for us to believe that he's still, you know, the cream of the crop, the top of the top. So, I mean, he still looks good. Like I said, he still can do it, but I'm not sure. But all in all, great fight. Hats off to the youngin' for getting in there, putting in the work, you know what I mean, and trying his best to win. I hope to see him again. I think there's a lot of guys out there he could beat. Just not Canelo right now. But, yeah, all in all, great fight, great card. Love to see that kind of thing again.
Yeah, it was a great fight in the end. Like I say, fantastic for boxing, fantastic for Mexican boxing. And, you know, I think everyone kind of won from that. You know, Munguia takes a loss, and yeah, he does lose his O, and he was only a few fights away from equaling Floyd's record. But, you know, he goes away with his stocks even higher than they were before. And everyone wants to see him again. You know, he's still... they were talking about how young he is. That's something I think was over-talked a little bit. I don't think he's as fresh as his age suggests he is. Obviously, he's had a whole heap of fights and he's been in many, many wars. But, you know, he does still have a few big nights left in him, I think. So I don't think he comes out as a big loser here kind of thing. I think he will still be in the mix with the big names. We'd still love to see him in there with many other guys in that division. Like, for example, you know... wouldn't mind seeing him in with Billy Joe Saunders if he can come back, you know, if he's ever going to be able to come back on weight. You know, there's other guys, obviously, like Benavidez, wouldn't mind seeing him with Munguia, wouldn't mind seeing Caleb Plant with Munguia. There's many fights out there for him at super middle. Moving to the Humble Civic Center in Humble, Texas, USA, over here, friend of the show, Susie Ramadan. She picked up win number 30. She's 30-4. A TKO for her in the fourth round against Judith Hatchbolt, who's now 5-19. So a nice little win there for Susie Ramadan. Moving now to the final card to mention. It went down at the Tokyo Dome in Tokyo, Japan. We're going to start with the undercard, of course. TJ Doheny. I don't even know what to say anymore. This guy is unbeatable in Tokyo. He's gone 3-0 with 3 KO wins in Tokyo in his last 3 fights because he got the TKO once again against another fighter. I don't think they did bets on this fight in the end. I couldn't see any odds on it at all, so I don't know if I don't know if anyone was able to place a bet on it with a different bookmaker, but I couldn't see it on my bet 365. But TJ Doheny, I don't know if he's upset the odds there, but again, he boxed an undefeated Japanese prospect and he stopped him in round 4. So Doheny now 26-4, and Brill Bayogos now 7-1 with a draw. Also on the card, we saw Takuma Inoue, the brother of Naoya. He's now 20-1. He was down on the deck in that fight, though, against Sho Ishida, now 34-4. But Inoue with the unanimous decision over 12, a successful defense of his WBA bantamweight world title. An unsuccessful defense, though, for the WBO bantamweight world title between Jason Maloney and Yoshiki Takai. Jason Maloney, like I say, loses the fight. He loses his world title. He's now 27-3. Yoshiki Takai was pretty good, I have to say. I was quite impressed with him. He set a good pace, good jab. You know, I liked everything he was doing. He was mixing up his shots from head to body. He's moved to 9-0. He's looked really good. He's picked up a belt. And I have to say, I hadn't seen too much of him prior to the other night. But I thought, you know, obviously Jason Maloney going in as the favourite. I've seen enough of Jason Maloney. He's a good fighter. He's a solid fighter. He's been in there with Inoue himself. I don't think he would have been, you know, too worried about going out there to Japan. They know him. They love him out there. And, I expected him to win this fight, really. He did have moments late on in the fight. That's the thing. He seemed to start really putting the pressure on late on. And that's when Takai seemed to slip a little bit. I think probably from, like, rounds, like, sort of 7-11. That's where Maloney started to really get back in the fight, and Takai looked, you know, very tired. But then Takai had a good 12th round, I think, just to close things out. And by the point, you know, Maloney started picking up the pace a little bit. He was just too far behind on the scorecards because Takai was so sharp from the off. So yeah, commiserations for Jason Maloney. Moving up the card once again, Saigo Akui. He's now 20-2 with a draw, a unanimous decision there against Taku Kuwahara, who's now 13-2, a defense there of Akui's WBA flyweight world title. And then moving straight to the main event, Naoya Inoue, now 27-0, a TKO for him against Lewis Nery, now 35-2. It was, of course, for the undisputed super bantamweight world titles, a sixth round TKO for Naoya Inoue. Although, Eddie, he didn't have it all his own way. He was down on the deck in the first round. I cannot believe it. I actually placed a bet that he would win the fight by knockout before the 10th round and that he wouldn't be knocked down. Can you believe it? And the one time that I ever backed that weird bet, he gets put down by Lewis Nery. After the fact, a lot of people are coming out saying, well, you know, Lewis Neary's a big puncher. You know, this, you know, we always knew it was going to be a hard fight for Inoue. I don't think many people were saying that before the fight. We saw Brandon Figueroa take Nery apart, and I don't think anyone was giving Nery a chance at all. But after the hard fight, well, I say it was a hard fight, after that one incident, a lot of people came out, you know, banging the drum for Nery. I think it was a bit of a defense mechanism, to be totally honest with you. But listen, Naoya Inoue, when he got put down, he got back. One thing I noticed, he didn't get back up straight away. He stood, you know, he stayed down for the entirety of the count. That made me think, oh, that shot might have been a bit bigger than I first thought it was. I don't think I watched it on the replay, but I didn't think it was a much of a shot initially when I first saw it. And you can, I'm sure, disagree with me, Eddie, and say your piece in a sec. But I didn't think it was a massive shot when it first landed. But when he took the count, I thought, oh, okay, maybe it was. But there was no doubt in my mind whatsoever that when he got back up off the canvas, you know, I knew he was going to still stop Lewis Nery. I was even more confident. I thought, oh dear, what have you just done there by putting him down? So yeah, you could actually get Inoue by KO at odds of 4-9, which was insane odds after he got dropped. Like, they were insane odds. I ended up making some good money on that fight in play. But yeah, back to what I'm saying. Really good fight from Inoue. Came back in that second round, straight away started to dominate, you know, with a little bit of desperation, but not too much. And, you know, ends up dropping Nery in that second round. Obviously, completely bosses things from there. I thought he was excellent. Again, mixing it from head to body. His body shots, he landed some horrendous looking body shots on Lewis Nery. Lewis Nery, to his credit, took him really well, and you could see he was bang up for the fight. You know, he wasn't very good against Figueroa. He was really bang up for this one against Inoue here in Japan. And like I say, Inoue did put him down again in the fifth and then got the stoppage in the sixth. So aside from that moment of madness where he found himself on the canvas and showed us all that maybe he's not quite the monster that we thought he was. Is that harsh? I don't know. He's definitely human, though. He's definitely human, even if he's only partly human. But I tell you what, after being dropped and getting back up off the canvas, after taking that count, there was a mission in his mind. And that mission was to get Lewis Nery out of there as quick as he physically could have done without making another mistake. And he pretty much did that. So all in all, aside from that little moment of madness, fantastic performance from Inoue. And we're going to forget he got knocked down, I think, in a few months' time. We're going to forget that that happened because he was flawless after that, Eddie.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't know about forgetting about the knockdown. I mean, but most people are going to talk about how he came back more so than the knockdown. He's a fantastic young fighter, one of the best that there is in boxing. And, you know, there's nothing more to say. I mean, the kid, he shows certain vulnerability by getting dropped, but then just looks like once he gets up, he's like a machine. He just, you know what I mean? Once you take out one piece, there's something else coming, you know, 10 times as hard. So, yeah, just the power, the speed, the skill, all of it. He's got everything. doesn't matter whether he fights an orthodox southpaw, you know, guy who can punch or can box. It just, it's hard. It's going to get to the point where it's going to be difficult to find, you know, competition at those weights for him, and he's going to have to continue to go up. And I think, just like I figured for the only thing that's going to be like I was thinking for what's his name? God damn it! Excellent fighter too. He's got a little old. Lomachenko. Oh. Lomachenko. I was thinking that, you know, the thing that would beat him would be weight, meaning going too high in weight, fighting guys beyond where he should, you know, where he should be fighting to the point of, like, have in order to make fights. You understand what I'm saying? And I think that's probably the only way. I don't see anyone until he gets old that is beating this kid at those weights. I just think he's, you know, he's going to have to look for challenges elsewhere, because it's just not going to happen. Unless somebody catches him and gets him out of there with one shot, like a one-off type situation, I just really don't see it. He's looking real dominant there. I mean, it's like he's doing it kind of, I don't say effortlessly because his last fight he got dropped, but just the way it just looks smooth. It looks like he means to do everything. Is like I said, his IQ is high. Everything. It's just hard. It's hard to find a hole in his game. You know what I mean? Maybe the fact that he does sometimes gets hit, you know, with shots at, you know, taking chances, you know, is where you can see slight vulnerability. But unless you got somebody like, you know, they can compete with him skill-wise, power, it's just too much. There's too many things he has on his side. So it's going to be a long road. It's going to be a long night for anybody getting in the ring with that young guy right now. And I'm looking forward to seeing him in the future.
Yeah, I think we can all agree with that. Cannot wait to see him out again. You know, this guy is a phenom, you know. Yeah, still, you know, has to be top 3 pound for pound on every single list. Every single time I see someone say, here's my pound for pound list, I look at the three names at the top. If it's not Crawford, Inoue, and Usyk in any order. Sorry, not Usyk. Am I losing my mind? Yeah, Usyk. Yeah, it has to be Usyk, Inoue, and Crawford in any order. If I don't see those three in the top three, then I just scroll right past, because it's a meaningless list, in my opinion. But anyway, that brings the review part to a close. It's now time to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the hard-hitting heavyweight contender. It is, of course, Mr. Cassius Chaney. Cassius, welcome back on the show, my friend. It's been a long time.
Hey, man. Yeah, it's been quite a while, man. But happy to be back. And I'm just looking forward to finishing up camp and getting ready for my next fight, you know?
There we go. We'll get into it in a moment. But yeah, we last spoke back in November of 2019, pre-COVID, such a long time ago. At the time, you were getting ready to fight Nick Jones. You ended up stopping him in 3 rounds. How have things been since then, my friend?
Everything's been good, man. You know, just chipping away and just trying to stay consistent, stay out the way, just stay healthy. Stay focused, stay motivated, and just grinding.
And yeah, obviously after that Nick Jones fight, you know, you picked up a couple more wins before running into George Arias and subsequently losing your O by split decision, it needs to be said. We saw obviously Jared Anderson take care of Arias in quick fashion. Did you feel you won the Arias fight, Cassius? Talk me through it just briefly.
I thought it was close. You know, I didn't really know how I felt about it. I thought it was close. I knew that, you know, I didn't really perform. It was a lot of stuff that was going on. And I kind of knew that it was either I take the fight or, you know, we kind of just lose out on camp money and things like that. So, you know, I took a risk and I thought that it was close. I don't think either one of us really did much. You know, but, you know, it was in his hometown and, you know, that's how it goes sometimes. So it wasn't much for me to really be totally whatever about, you know what I'm saying? It just, I just look forward to the next thing. You know, I just wanted to heal up, get healthy, and then look forward to my next fight, you know.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think it needs to be said as well that I think he didn't do himself any favours against Anderson. I think he was, you know, he's better than that normally. Since the Arias fight, getting back onto you, you've had two more fights, obviously. Most recently, stopping former WBA heavyweight world champion Trevor Bryan. Talk me through that fight, Cassius, being your most recent one.
That was just a good fight for me. I was familiar with Trevor, just seeing him throughout the years of him boxing and things like that. And I just knew that I just had to come in there prepared. I had a good camp. You know, I decided to train back home with my longtime coach, Fred Weaver, who I started with as an amateur. And finally, you know, it felt good. It felt like the right time for me to come back home, given the experience of coaches I've went through and met and learned from. And you know, I was able to come back and just have a good camp to where I was just more mature and understanding of things that I wanted and needed to do.
Yeah, because if I remember that fight correctly, early on in the fight, you had quite a low punch output. And I was wondering, like, what's going on here? Then as the rounds went on, obviously Trevor Bryan started to gas. That's when you stepped up the pressure and you got him out of there in the end with a brutal right hand. Was that all part of the game plan?
I wouldn't say it was part of the game plan, but, I mean, I had been out the ring quite a while, so it wasn't like I knew where, you know what I mean? Like, I was a little bit apprehensive on, you know, where I was, you know, stamina-wise and where I was as far as just being in the ring. You know, I was out the ring for a year, so I wasn't really trying to just burn myself out, you know what I mean? My whole objective was just to try to keep him off me and just be smart. And I knew eventually that I'll hit him.
Yeah, and like I say, you really got him in the end. Yeah, I do remember watching that fight. I stayed up till, you know, 4 or 5 a.m. to watch it live. And I remember thinking early on, like, I didn't think your punch output was that high. And I'm beginning to ask myself, Is Cassius gassed out? But then all of a sudden, like I say, the opportunity presented itself, and then you had more than enough, you know, still left in the tank for sure to get him out, and it was a fantastic stoppage. Let's look to the future. Your next fight has been announced. June the 7th is the date in Florida against Michael Hunter for the interim WBA heavyweight world title. Rumors were that it was initially going to be against Martin Bacoli. Someone on Twitter asked you, how did Michael Hunter leapfrog Martin Bacoli? To which you answered the tweet by saying, long story. Are you able to shed any further light on that for us, Cassius?
I think I said long story? I don't even know. I think it was a lot of, I have no idea. I think it was more on Bacoli's side, the situation with his team or something like that, with his management. People complain about me leapfrogging people and getting the Bacoli situation. So it was a lot of little tricks and stuff going on that, you know, haven't been said or told to me either, you know? So I understand if people feel a certain way about Michael Hunter. I don't even know, because Michael Hunter just, he got ranked. So it's not like he's not ranked, you know what I mean? So I really don't know. I just think that, you know, some people can make calls and make things happen. I don't know, you know, but, you know, it's a cool fight for me. You know what I mean? I'm okay. I'm cool with it.
And Cassius, I remember back in the day speaking to you when you were promoted by Main Events. I genuinely don't know who you're promoted by these days.
I'm with Don King. I'm with
DKP. Are you with Don now? Okay.
Yeah. So.
Cool.
Okay. Mike is too. So I think we're both with Don. So
yeah, that's right. Yeah, both with Don. Are you anticipating the hardest fight of your life here, Cassius, or not? I know you rate Hunter pretty highly.
Yeah, he's a clever fighter. You know what I mean? He's very, very clever. But I don't know. I'm rating it just a good fight. You know, I think he has things that he has strength and he has weaknesses, you know, like most of us. But for me, I just got to go in there and do what I do well and just be smart, work off the jab, and be the big man, You know what I mean? If you let him bully you, he'll bully you. So if you let him frustrate you, he'll frustrate you. So for me, it's just about being smart, sticking to the game plan and chipping away at him, you know? So I'm not really, I'll be honest, I'm not really stressed out about it. I'm just excited to get back in the ring, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a fight I'm very much looking forward to as well. You pretty much answered my next question just there. I was going to ask, you know, how do you see the fight playing out? Obviously, Michael's experience as an amateur goes a long way. As a pro, he's been in there with the likes of Martin Bacoli, Alexander Povetkin, Alexander Usyk. But as you say, you're the bigger man and you're coming into this fight with better momentum, I think it's fair to say, than he is. Right, Cassius, I can barely hear a word you're saying. You've gone all strange.
Oh, can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Yeah, he's been in some wars. I'm fresher, I believe. I'm a fresher fighter. And I think that he's been in some tough fights. You know what I'm saying? He's won some tough fights. He's had draws in some tough fights. And I think that, I do have the bigger punch, you know. He's been really, really good because he's so much more athletic than everybody, mostly. You know, most of the guys that he's fought, he's been more athletic than outside of Usyk. So now, you know, he's fighting an athlete as well. So I'm just looking forward to seeing how it plays out. I'm just got to stay away from the antics, you know, and just stay focused towards the game plan and just have fun in there. You know what I mean?
And Cassius, there's a part of me that just can't see this fight going 12 rounds. Do you think we could possibly see 12 here?
If it's 12, I don't even know how many rounds it is. But
I'm going to assume it's 12, just because it's for the interim title. I could be wrong.
Do I see it going 12? Not really. Not really. I think one of us is going to have to commit, and my ideal is, like I said, I think I have the bigger punch. He's a sneaky puncher, but I don't think that I think if you look at it, like, I know we got the same amount of knockouts, but you know, when I hurt people, I hurt them for real. So it's like, I think it's a little bit different, you know. And I also just think, like I said, you know, he's a clever guy. I think he's just more clever than what people feel. So they just go at him. They just go chasing him. You know, I kind of made that mistake with Arias, in a sense, just trying to follow him around. In this situation, I don't think it's, you know, I just got to be smart and pick and choose when to go at him and bang him up, bang his arm, bang him, whatever, you know, to be smart, you know.
You went a little bit funny towards the end. I don't need you to repeat any of it. It's all good, but I'm just warning you for the next question, and it is my final question for you, Cassius.
Okay.
Not this weekend, but next, we'll finally see that undisputed heavyweight title fight, Usyk Fury. I know you've got history there, but who wins and how for you?
Right now, I have to lean towards Fury right now, just because he's had that extra time. And he's big, and he knows how to make the fight just ugly. You know what I mean? Usyk's very good at fighting tough fights, you know, pretty. You know what I'm saying? Finishing the fights out pretty. But I just think Fury's going to be the bigger guy, and it's hard to find sparring for somebody like Fury unless you go get basketball players or something like that. You just, you know what I mean? You just had to move around the ring. I just think Fury had enough time to prepare. And I also think that boxing sometimes looks forward to the next fight. And that next fight people want to see is Joshua and Fury at some point. So I think it's going towards that, you know what I mean? Or Joshua and Wilder, you know, who knows? But I think it's going towards that type of situation.
Yeah, cannot wait for any of those fights to be made. Just before we wrap things up, Cassius, like I say, haven't had you on since pre-COVID. If you want to just close out just with a little message to the listeners before we let you go, my friend, the floor is yours.
Tune in. First of all, I want to say thank you for the interview. Tune in June 7th, Miami, Florida. It's going to be a great night. It's going to be a great night of fights. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to winning. May the best man win. And I'm just happy the camp has started. I got an opponent, so I'm just ready to go.
There we go. Listen, Cassius, it's been great catching up again. Thank you for your time. Best of luck on the 7th of June, and we'll speak sometime afterwards for sure, my friend.
Okay, thank you, J-Man. I appreciate it.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. We're going to start here with a card that's been announced for July the 6th at the Prudential Center in Newark, live on ESPN. We're going to see a homecoming fight for Shakur Stevenson. He steps in the ring with Artem Harutyunyan. Who else do we have on that card? We've got Oshiki Foster defending his world title against Robson Conceição. So yeah, that one to go down, like I say, July the 6th. Keyshawn Davis as well on the undercard. He steps in with Mexican Miguel Madueño, I think his name said. So all the best to all those guys there. Also, Artur Beterbiev has pulled out of his fight with Dmitry Bivol due to a injury sustained in training. That one was set to go down on June the 1st. Postponed, you know, Bivol now has a new opponent. And it's a great shame because I've got to be very careful what I say on this, but Beterbiev has pulled out at least of his last three fights in a row against Anthony Yard, against Callum Smith, and now against Dmitry Bivol. And there are people that are very sure that something's amiss there. There's something going on. But like I say, got to be quite careful what gets said. Also, Jaron Ennis will be defending his welterweight world title, the IBF, against Cody Crowley. That one to go down on July the 13th in Philadelphia. So Matchroom are coming to Philly. Should be a good one there. No undercard announced just yet for that one. That's it for the news. Moving now to the preview part of the show. We're going to start here tomorrow in New York. We're going to see Micaiah Krebs, who's 7-0, stepping in the ring with friend of the show, Melissa Odessa Parker, 6-2. That's over 8 rounds there at Super Bantamweight. All the best there to Melissa. Moving now to the Palenque de la Feria in Aguascalientes, Mexico. Over here, Erica Cruz Hernandez, she fights here for the WBA World Super Bantamweight title. It's over 10-2s. Like I say, she's 17-2. She steps in with Nazarena Romero, who's 13-0 with a draw. This is a Matchroom card, by the way. It's going to be live on DAZN. Also on that card, the return to the ring for Eduardo Rocky Hernandez, 34-2, coming off that loss to Oshiki Foster. He steps in with Daniel Lugo, who people might remember, he's coming off a draw last time out to Maurizio Lara. So that one was back in February of this year. So people, you know, will know that name. It's fresh in their minds. Daniel Lugo, 27-2 with a draw. Could be interesting there. Moving now to Ellesmere Port Sports Village in Ellesmere Port, Cheshire, United Kingdom. I don't think we've ever been here before, but what we will see on this card is Paul Butler, 36-3, former world champion, friend of the show, stepping in the ring with Norberto Jimenez, who's 33-10 with 6 draws. That one over 12 rounds for the vacant IBO Bantamweight World title. It's a M22 or M22 promotions card. That's Joe Gallagher's promotional outfit. Also on the undercard as well, we're going to see Callum Johnson returning to the ring. No opponent just yet for him. Another friend of the show. Moving now to the York Hall, Bethnal Green, London. This one goes down on Saturday on TNT. Let's touch on the undercard. We're going to see where should we start here? There's a few guys. I'm not going to run through all the opponents and the rest of it, but a few guys on the undercard. Obviously, we had Archie Sharp on last week's show. He's out on the undercard once again. His first fight back with Frank Warren. We're also going to see Ben Fowle on the undercard. We're going to see Tommy Fletcher, Royston Barney Smith back in action. But the bigger fights, we're going to see We're going to see Ryan Garner, 14-0, stepping in with Liam Dillon, 13-1. With a draw. This one's over 10 rounds at super featherweight for the WBC International Super Featherweight title. It's an interesting fight. Obviously, Liam Dillon last time out went the distance against Reese Bellotti, even though, you know, he lost unanimously, but he still went 12 rounds. And Reese Bellotti, if nothing else, is a really big puncher. So I was quite shocked when I saw that the bookies are expecting Ryan Garner to stop to stop Liam Dillon. I'm expecting this one to go the distance. Ryan Garner to win on points, I think, is probably the bet. Though Liam Dillon to win on points is 10-1, which I think is crazily overpriced. I just don't understand the bookies' stance on this fight here. Also on the card as well, we're going to see Francesco Grandelli, 18-2 with two draws. This one's for the EBU silver featherweight title. He steps in with Scotland's very own Nathaniel Collins, 14-0 with seven KOs. Always good to watch him. And then, yeah, jump into the main event. Once again, some odds here that I think are well worth mentioning to our listeners. Denzel Bentley, currently 18-3 with a draw. It's for the vacant WBO International Middleweight title. He's coming off, Denzel Bentley, that dreadful performance at the back end of last year against Nathan Heaney. He was absolutely terrible in that fight there. And he steps in here with Danny Dignam, who's 16-1 with a draw. Now, Danny Dignam and Denzel Bentley both have something in common, and it's the fact that they both went out there to the States and boxed Janibek Alimkanouli. And obviously, we know that Danny Dignam got splattered by him in just two rounds, and Denzel Bentley managed to take Alimkanouli the distance over 12, and Alimkanouli looked really bad that night. But Denzel Bentley didn't really do too much, in my opinion. So I think based off of that, the bookies have made their prices up. And basically, I don't know if this is going to happen. I'm just saying it's a price too big to skip over. But right now, and I'm looking at the odds right now as we record this show, you've got Denzel Bentley to win this fight on points at 5-1. And the over-under is set at, it was actually 6.5 rounds. It's now gone up to 7.5. I'm not too surprised. I just don't understand why, just because Danny Dignam got knocked out in a couple of rounds by Janibek, why on earth they're so sure Denzel Bentley, coming off one of the worst performances of his career, is going to go in there and just blitz him out of there. I just don't understand those odds. I really don't. If he does go and do that, then fair play to him. But, you know, Danny Dignam is a fit kid. And, you know, it's like Last Chance Saloon, I think. I think he's happy to be back on TV. And it's a must-win fight to reignite his career. So I think we're going to see a good Danny Dignam, a hungry Danny Dignam. And Denzel Bentley looked all but hungry in the last time we saw him under the lights against Nathan Heaney. So I just don't get those odds. Moving now to the Cardiff International Arena in Cardiff, Wales, United Kingdom. Also, this is on Saturday night, and it's going to be live on Sky Sports. A couple fights to mention over here. Another really interesting price. We've got 17-0 Mark Jeffers in a 10-rounder here. He steps in with Darren Johnston. Now, I couldn't tell you anything about Darren Johnston at all, but what I will say is he's an undefeated fighter, and he's 8-0. That's about all I can tell you about the guy. He's got two KOs, which would indicate to me that he's probably, you know, more of a boxer than a knockout guy who's going to stand in the pocket and bang with you. However, Mark Jeffers is 17-0 with four KOs, and I just cannot get my head around this. But Mark Jeffers, they're expecting him to get the knockout, which is a very rare thing in itself, but you can get 2-1 for Jeffers to win by decision. Makes no sense at all to me. That I cannot understand why they think he's going to go in there and stop this guy. Again, I could be wrong, and I don't know anything about Darren Johnston, but, you know, Mark Jeffers has only stopped 4 of 17. So 13 men have gone the distance, and, you know, some of those men, or most of those men, have had much worse looking records than this guy Johnston. So I don't understand that one there. That's another price that has to be mentioned. Also on the card as well, Reese Edwards, 15-0. It's for the vacant WBA Intercontinental Featherweight title. It's over 10 rounds. He steps in with Thomas Patrick Ward, 34-1 with a draw. Now, listeners will know that I've been a little harsh. I've been a little critical of Thomas Patrick Ward because I think he padded out his record and he took ages doing it. Then he stepped up against Otabek Kolmatov and got banged out. We saw Kolmatov obviously fight Raymond Ford most recently for the world title. And, you know, he's a good fighter. He was winning that fight. Raymond Ford needed a knockout and got it in the last few seconds of the fight. So there's no shame in losing to Otabek Kolmatov, but that's his one loss. And they're deciding to write him off as well when I'm looking at the odds here, because Thomas Patrick Ward is 9-4 for a decision win. And let's be honest, that's how he would win the fight. He's not a big puncher at all. It's more than likely that he'll win the fight on points. And Reese Edwards, I mean, he's coming off a win. He's coming off his career best performance because he actually stepped in there with a really recognisable name. He got in there with Brad Foster and he managed to get the decision that night. But there was only one judge scoring it. It was the referee, Ron Kearney. He was refereeing and judging. There wasn't three judges in that fight. And if there was three judges in that fight, it very well could have gone the other way because most people had Brad Foster winning that one. So he's coming off the back of that. And I've got no idea why they're favouring him so highly against Thomas Patrick Ward, who is a, you know, very seasoned pro and very seasoned amateur. And also another crazy thing here, and I just can't believe my eyes, Reese Edwards has only gone 10 rounds on one occasion. This will be his second 10 round fight. Thomas Patrick Ward, you know, he's been 10 rounds several times. I just don't understand it. He's even gone 12 rounds before. So I don't understand that one at all. I really don't get it. I don't think he's lost that many steps. You know, even if he has regressed a little bit. What else do we have? We have the main event, Jessica McCaskill defending her WBA and IBO welterweight world titles. She's 12-3 with a draw. She steps in with the Welsh Lauren Price, 6-0 again. This fight here, very much, you know, expected to go the distance. I'd be very shocked if anyone gets stopped here. We know McCaskill's a real tough girl, and Lauren Price has got the youth on her side and, you know, shown quite a good boxing brain and good boxing ability since turning pro. And obviously, we know is a gold medalist in the amateurs in the Olympics. So, again, you'd expect it to go the distance, but I don't think Jessica McCaskill should be a 6-1 underdog to win on points. I don't understand that. She's also 7-2 by any method. You know, it does look like she's on the slide now, Jessica McCaskill, but it's a massive step up for Lauren Price. This is a mammoth step up in class, and I don't think Jessica McCaskill should be that big of an underdog. Also on that undercard, I almost missed out there. We're going to see Huey Fury, 27-3, back in action. It's good to see him out. He steps in with Patrick Corte, who's 21-3 with a draw. They're expecting Huey Fury to get the stoppage there within three rounds. That's over eight rounds there. And we're also going to see Lewis Edmondson, 8-0, stepping in with Joel McIntyre, 20-8. Again, you'd probably have to back Lewis Edmondson to win that one on points over eight rounds at light heavy. Moving now, though, to the big card that goes down in Australia I'm not entirely sure what time this is going to be on. I don't know if it's early hours of Sunday for UK or what. It's very confusing. I should probably check it while you're talking about it, Eddie. So I will come to you straight away just to make things a little bit easier. I'm going to start here with the main event, which we don't often do. Vasyl Lomachenko, 17-3. Stepping in with George Kambosos Jr., 21-2. It's for the IBF and IBO lightweight world titles. Talk to me about that fight.
Yeah, it's a very interesting fight. You know what I mean? George Kambosos, you know, coming off those fights with Devin Haney and losing to Devin Haney. But, I mean, if I know Kambosos' mentality, he's not thinking, you know, he's not looking in the past anyway, and he's thinking he's a completely different fighter, even though these two guys have fought. And most people think that, you know, Lomachenko got the better of it, even though, you know, Haney got the win. We also know that triangle theories typically do not work in boxing. So this is just a whole new fight. It has nothing to do with any of their previous fights. We have to just focus on the two guys that are in there. And in my opinion, unless Lomachenko is just old now, which I don't see him being, you know, like I just his recent performance with Haney and just him in general. Like, I just don't see it happening that quick. And I think he's just got a little too much skill and understanding and boxing ability than to really, for, I don't want to say Kambosos can't do anything, because he can get in there and obviously surprise us like he did with Teofimo Lopez, but I just really don't see it. I still think Lomachenko's footwork is too good, and you know, it's just going to be a really, really rough night for Kambosos. However, you never know. He can get in there and surprise us all, but I doubt it. I'm going to be honest. I think I see Lomachenko maybe winning a decision, maybe even a late stoppage.
Yeah, I think I have to side with you there. I think I would definitely lean more towards the points win. A late stoppage would be quite a statement. I do think Lomachenko's probably lost a step or two. I think it's important that you brought up the Haney fights. Obviously, they weren't completely not competitive against Haney, you know, sorry, against Kambosos when Haney went to Australia and beat him in back-to-back fights over 24 rounds. I don't think Kambosos won a single round out of all 24, if my memory serves me right. And obviously, I'm a guy that feels Lomachenko won the fight against Haney. So, yeah, you touched on it. And it is important to bring up, although we stick with the triangle theory's not working thing, but it has to be mentioned. I think Kambosos is an extremely tough fighter, you know, obviously been in there with Lomachenko. That's a guy, again, another triangle theory. Been in there with Teofimo Lopez. He beat Teofimo Lopez, and Teofimo Lopez obviously beat very narrowly Lomachenko as well. So there's a lot of tangibles there to cling on to. I've just got this feeling though that Kambosos is going to do better in this fight than most people think he'll do. You know, obviously the fights in Australia, they, you know, the crowd were not able to help him against Haney, but I've just got a feeling here, you know, he's going to be the bigger guy. Obviously, he always comes in good shape. I've just got this feeling, even though I think stylistically it's, you know, the unorthodox style of Lomachenko, whereas Kambosos is pretty straightforward, pretty much a textbook boxer. I think, you know, style-wise, it's not a good matchup, but I've just got this sneaky feeling that I don't want to say Lomachenko's going to look vulnerable. I still favour him to win the fight, but I've just got this feeling that Kambosos is going to do a lot better than people think. I could be wrong. He's a nice guy, Kambosos. I wouldn't mind seeing him win. But I've just got this sneaky suspicion. He's not going to disgrace himself here like he did against Haney. I think he's going to win some rounds. It seems like you're dying to come in and say something, Eddie.
Oh no, I'm off. I hit the button. But no, yeah, that I can agree with. One thing about Kambosos is that he's going to definitely give the best account of himself, the best account of himself that he possibly can. You know, with you know, the lack of ability maybe to compete boxing wise with a Lomachenko, but he's definitely going to put his best foot forward and try to, you know, upset the odds. I mean, I don't know what the odds are saying right now, but I just really don't think, even with his focus and determination and his belief in himself, I just still don't think he has enough of what it takes, style-wise especially, skill or style, that's going to really do anything that's going to be something that Lomachenko hasn't already seen and dealt with easily in the past. Now, I'm not going to say easily because, like I said, this guy's mind is on a different level sometimes, and he comes in and he's going to try. But, yeah, it's going to be a hell of a struggle.
Also on the card, friend of the show, Andrew Maloney, 26-3 boxes for the WBC interim super flyweight world title against Pedro Guevara, who's 41-4 with a draw. But all four of his losses have either come by split decision or majority decision. He's a tough, tough guy, very experienced. Andrew Maloney obviously just saw his brother Jason lose last weekend his world title on the Inoue undercard. They're so similar, Jason and Andrew, I think. You know, obviously they're identical twins, but at one point their boxing record was exactly the same. One of them seems to win a world title, then the other one does. Then one of them loses it, then the other one does. So they seem to be carbon copies of each other. Like I say, at one point, even their boxing records were exactly the same. So I would like to see Andrew Maloney win this fight. He is the favourite. He's expected to win. It's in Australia, which has to be mentioned. But I think Guevara is a good priced underdog to win on points for that fight there. Because like I say, all of his losses have been close and he's been in some good company. So I think he's about 3-1 to win on points. I think that's a bit overpriced in my opinion. But again, I would still favour Andrew Maloney. We're also going to see a prospect that they're you know, obviously quite confident in. Imam Katiev, he's 6-0, I think with 6 KOs, if I'm not mistaken. It's a 10-rounder for him at light heavyweight in a step up against Rikards Bolotniks of Latvia. 20-7 with a draw. I don't know if he's boxed since he lost to Oleksandr Gvozdik. Also on the card as well, friend of the show, Nina Hughes, fantastic lady based in Essex, who's obviously a world champion. She comes all the way from Essex over to Australia here, defending her WBA bantamweight world title over 10 twos against Shanika Johnson, who's 15-2. We know Shanika Johnson, you know, she comes to the UK, and she went to the weigh-in and she applied body paint to her breasts and actually weighed in with her breasts out. But they were body painted, and you know, no one knew. So she's quite a quirky character, and she's a good fighter. You know, she showed her toughness against Ellie Scottney. She showed her toughness against Susie Ramadan. She's extremely tough, got a huge heart. But I think that Nina Hughes, and both girls are friends of the show, by the way. I got a lot of love for both ladies, but I think Nina Hughes is going to be a little bit too cute, a little bit too clever for Shanika Johnson. And I don't think, even though she's a long way away from home, they're going to be able to take the win away from Nina Hughes. I would expect her to win this one on points, I think, over 10 twos. Also on the card as well, Joseph Goodall, 10-2 with a draw. Little bit of a fun fighter, I guess. You know, I don't mind seeing him fight. He can certainly punch. He's got 9 KO wins. We saw him step in the ring and cause an upset when he boxed Stefan Shaw. It stopped him back in July of last year, but then he got banged out most recently back in November to Efia Jagba. So he's back in the ring. He steps in with Faiga Opelu, who's 16-4 with 2 draws, the Samoan based in Australia, who's been around the block and he's been matched real tough. So yeah, this one shouldn't go the distance because, like I say, I think both men either stop you or get stopped kind of thing. But you'd have to expect Joseph Goodall to probably get the stoppage. And last but certainly not least on the card, we're going to see a fighter called Hemi Ahayo. He's 21-1. He also has to his name 16 KOs. He's a 33-year-old, 6-foot-tall heavyweight. So he's not very big. And he steps in with Lucas Big Daddy Brown, who's 31-5 these days. And obviously 6'5". So the much bigger guy in Lucas Brown. Lucas Brown, coming off that loss last time out, he lost to Mark Petrovsky. I didn't see that fight, I don't think. That one was in Dubai. But I did see the fight before that against Jarrell Big Baby Miller, where Lucas Brown showed me that he had quite a bit more in his tank than maybe I thought he had. He's up there in age, like I say, 45 years of age now. But this guy here, Hemi Ahayo, hasn't really boxed anyone. And the one loss that he took, he suffered to Faiga Opelu, who we just spoke about. He got stopped by Opelu in 4 rounds. And Opelu, again, triangle theories here, Opelu got stopped by Lucas Brown in 7 rounds. So I'm just pointing out the mere fact that Lucas Brown is the much bigger guy and managed to stop the one guy that Ahayo lost to. And Ahayo hasn't really boxed anyone. Lucas Brown, even though he's been stopped in all 5 of his losses, they've been in good company, very good company. And the 31 wins he's got, you know, he's a massive puncher. And again, Lucas Brown is about a 4-1 underdog, but that's just to win by any method. There's no point looking at that price. I'm going to wait to see what the odds are going to be for him to win by a knockout, because I think that's the only way he does get the win. He's not really, you know, a man that's designed to go the distance, and it's an 8-rounder. I still don't think it will go 8. I think we're going to see a stoppage here, you know, either way. But I think Lucas Big Daddy Brown's about 4-1, and I think that's a huge price. I don't understand. I really don't understand that. And Lucas Brown has upset the odds time and time again. Time and time again with those heavy hands. So all the best to Lucas Big Daddy Brown. He's a friend of the show. I'd like to see him win this one here. I think he's at the tail end of his career now, it has to be said. But his story is truly remarkable. Right. That's all I've got to say, Eddie. I don't know if you had anything to say to wrap things up before I come in with the outro.
No, my man, we got everything. It's good to see Lucas Brown out there still trying to put his hands on guys and knock them out. But I don't know, man. You know, the older we get, the more dangerous each fight becomes. So, yeah. Hopefully he does well. But, you know, let's not hold our breath when it comes to that. I want to see. Hopefully, if he can get him out of there early, that would be the best thing. But, yeah, that's it, Dojo. You can go with the outro, my man.
Yeah, he certainly will come to get it done early. That's what he likes to do. He's a right character. He's a right character, Big Daddy Brown. I've got a lot of time for the guy. But, yeah, that is it for the preview part. In part one, we did the review part. Then we welcomed our special guest, the heavy-hitting heavyweight, Mr. Cassius Chaney, who's boxing for an interim world title next month. In part two, we did the news, just wrapped up the preview part. The final thing for me to do is to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 447 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the hard-hitting heavyweight contender, Mr. Cassius Chaney. All the best to him in his big fight next month. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. That is about everything from myself. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall see you all again soon. Same time next week.